On day 9 of the Washington, D.C. federal government shutdown, here's where we stand.
In a government shutdown, millions of Americans face inconvenience or outright hardship. In an economic shutdown, every American could see their 401ks and home values fall, borrowing costs for mortgages and student loans rise, and there would be a significant risk of a very deep recession.
Great. President Obama speaking yesterday, and yes, we heard from the Republicans as well. Here's Speaker of the House John Boehner.
What the president said today was, if there's unconditional surrender by Republicans, he'll sit down and talk to us. That's not the way our government works.
The way the government works. That's pretty rich to hear from the speaker this week. In any case, Stephen King joins us. He's HSBC chief economist. He's author of When the Money Runs Out, The End of Western Affluence. Stephen King, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Great. What's really interesting about talking with you is that you write that, in fact, all of this political talk in Washington and this little tempest in a teapot going on under the Capitol Dome is actually an indication of something much, much bigger, that the deck chairs are being kind of rearranged on the Titanic of Western affluence, and that what we're really seeing is the end of the kinds of wealth and the assumptions that we've made in the industrial West, Europe and the United States, for a century now. Really?
Unfortunately, yes. It might not sound like a very cheerful story, but we've been accustomed over the last 50 years or so, maybe 60 years or so, to assume that our economies continue to expand at a rapid pace. And that assumption worked very, very well up until the end of the 20th century. But for the last 13 years or so, so importantly, even before the onset of the global financial crisis, economies have expanded at a much slower pace. Now, that in itself is fine because we're still getting slightly better off more slowly than was the case previously. But the difficulty is that we have made promises to ourselves in the past based on a continuation of the old growth rates. But now with these new, much lower growth rates, it's more difficult to meet those promises. And those promises range from things like entitlements, you know, pensions, healthcare, education, through to promises within the financial system, like the relationship between people who lend money and people who borrow money. And all those things have become a lot more difficult over the course of the last few years.
And those conflicts are ratcheted up. And so the rhetoric that we're seeing really bespeaks the difficulty of working out the math. And in the midst of this declining set of expectations, as much as anything, you said it's not a cheerful story. I should say nobody ever looks to people named Stephen King for cheerful stories. I'm talking with Stephen D. King, chief economist at HSBC. So is this an opportunity for the Chinese and for the East Asians to really go, you know what? Let's get out from under these assumptions about the West and accelerate our attempt to jettison ourselves from the debt cycle in the United States.
Well, there certainly has been a big theme over the last few years as a consequence of the rise of China, the rise of East Asia. And actually, I think one of the problems that's come through is that their success has reflected in things like much higher energy prices, much higher metals prices, much higher food prices. And their success also is a reflection of the fact that global investment is much more mobile. So, you know, companies that may have invested in the States or in Europe in the past now can choose to invest in much cheaper labor markets in East Asia. And the consequence of this is that although the global economic pie has got bigger over the last few years, Asia's share and the emerging market share has gone up really quite rapidly. Even as the U.S. and Europe have struggled to grow as quickly as they had done in the past.
So even though the Republicans and the president can try to reassure Americans that it's okay, we'll dodge this bullet, we'll get through the deadline, it's not going to be an apocalypse, we'll bounce back and everything will be the same. In fact, you're saying the opposite is the case, that this signal in Washington basically says the end is coming. It may be fine in a couple of months, but it's not going to be the same, right?
That's absolutely right. There's a degree of wishful thinking that takes place amongst the political classes. They always assume that somehow the economy will rebound to the growth rates of old. And that assumption has been wrong now for 13 or 14 years in a row. It's what I call sometimes the theological option that politicians pray for a strong recovery. Unfortunately, their prayers haven't really been answered. And it's that growing gap between economic reality and political promise. It's becoming ever more challenging year by year.
And the Chinese wealth, the Saudi wealth, fossil fuel wealth, emerging markets aren't going to bail out the U.S. economy in the form of purchasing exports.
Well, the problem is that even if U.S. exports go up to those countries, it's also the case that U.S. wages are coming down or being pressurized downwards as a consequence of outsourcing and offshoring to those countries. So there are winners and losers within the U.S., but overall, I think the performance of the economy has not been as strong as one might have expected, given the dynamics of China and other parts of the emerging world. So, yes, it's a struggle.
Stephen D. King is chief economist at HSBC. He's the author of When the Money Runs Out, The End of Western Affluence. And, you know, we'll call on you again whenever we need a cheerful story, Stephen King.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.